Yeah, and really, LBJ was probably the first one. LBJ had a body count a mile long. I mean, going back to the days before he was vice president, when he was a senator, getting assault with Michael Hastings, one of the people in the Obama body count, who was, you know, told everybody he was about to break a huge story for Rolling Stone magazine. It was going under. Then he runs his car into a tree at high speed. When you have conspirators in charge, then pretty much everything significant is a conspiracy because they're conspirators. This is how they work. It's how they do business. We already know that 50% of Americans have less than 1% of the collective wealth and make less than $27,000 a year. Every one of these illegals is entering at the absolute bottom, so they're adding to that 50%. And they're trusting the same media that is telling you Oswald acted alone in the 19... 19-
What you have been asking for is finally here, the Matrix Solutions Deprogramming Series, Your Right of Self-Determination, by Prime Minister David Williams and broken down in manageable pieces for you to finally learn the truth as to what your right of self-determination really is. So now is your time to start down the track of learning to think again. Start with your right of self-determination. Use the link below to gain access to this valuable information.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Today I have Donald Jeffries coming back. I have such a fascinating discussion with him. He wrote this book called Hidden History, and it pretty much talks about all the different topics in the last six decades, from the JFK assassination all the way to Obama's scandals. The corruption that was happening underneath, from Bush to, you know, Senior Bush, Reagan, the Franklin scandal, the McMartin preschool. He talks about New World Order. He's talking about eugenics. He talks about all these things, but he has all these facts and quotes. It's like an encyclopedia. And I was just really impressed by it. The foreword of his book was written by Roger Stone. It's just really a fascinating, good book. He also wrote The Survival of the Richest, which is his newest book that's out. Excellent book. I highly recommend for you, if you want to get an overview or somebody wants an overview of kind of why we're in the situation we're in, all the corruption that's going on, I really recommend this Hidden History. Giving it to somebody who's struggling to believe you, someone who's struggling to even see there's corruption, because he has so many facts. And you can dive into any one of his chapters and read a couple books just in that one area, but it really gives you a good overview, and it's fascinating. So this is a two-part interview that I have with him. But before I get into that, I want to talk about my patrons. Thank you so much for supporting the program. And he sticks around. He talks about his upcoming book. He covers the Nuremberg trials. It's hidden history, but back from the Civil War to the 1963. So it's the prequel to his hidden history book that we're going to be talking about today. And he talks about the Nuremberg trials. And so for my patrons, he's going to give you a glimpse of what happened in the Nuremberg trials and why he thinks it was such a tragedy of justice. And a lot of detail. We talk about that a little bit at the end of this interview, and then he dives into it more for my patrons. So that is little as a dollar a month. And if you can afford more, I'd really appreciate it. It's what keeps my show going. That and the little advertisement and affiliates that I have. Of course, you know, YouTube doesn't pay. They really don't pay that much. So people think that people are getting rich on YouTube. It's just not true. But yeah, it's keeping me going. I'm getting to a point where I have a reasonable living wage by doing all these things. And this is my passion. I want to get out the stuff that real journalism is not covering, the things that our country really needs to hear in order to become what we want to become. I also love to talk about the cutting edge of where science and where things are going, because if we manage our country in an ethical way and we're not completely incompetent like we are now, we can have so much prosperity. We have a lot of opportunity. Our future could be amazing, but we need to wake more people up. We really need to wake people up to see beyond the narrative that's out there. We need people to get past this left-right paradigm and look at what's true, what's moral, what's ethical, how do we really want to live in this country? So that's the point of my show. So those who support me, thank you so much. And don't forget to push the bell, because people who are subscribing are telling me they're not getting my shows. And so in order to get these shows, you really need to push the bell and do it every time. Like if you haven't done it yet today, push the bell, because you need to keep doing that in order to get my stuff. It's hard. I have to grow organically. They don't do a lot for my show. I know recently people are seeing my show more, but it's very difficult for me to grow because they're not going to feature my show very often. So again, let's get into that interview with Donald Jeffries. Hi, Donald. Welcome back to the program.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
Your book is incredible, The Hidden History. I know we talked about Survival of the Richest last time, and I have been reviewing your Hidden History book, and it's like an encyclopedia of everything that's been going on in the last five decades in the United States, and covering every major issue and the corruption behind it with facts. It's really incredible. So if anybody wanted to get an overview of everything that was being talked about, that would be the book. What made you, it looks like a book of passion. What made you write this thing?
Well, I started out studying the JFK assassination when I was a teenager. I worked for Mark Lane's group as a volunteer, a Citizens Committee of Inquiry, and we were trying to lobby what would become the House Committee, Select Committee on Assassinations, that ultimately disappointed a bunch of us. But I just kind of started, it started from there, and then it's natural to go into the MLK assassination, the RFK assassination. And then I started looking at some of the right-wing conspiracies and the New World Order stuff. And, so I cover both the left and right in this. And I just have always been interested, and for years before the internet, I was reading constantly back when people used to read books. And I would take detailed notes on things that really interested me. So I had a big file with stuff for all these cases. And then obviously it's easy to research on the internet, so I could update things. And politics continues to fascinate me, so I just kind of got the idea of putting all this together. The original subtitle was going to be an encyclopedia, not an expose, because it really is kind of an encyclopedia form, and readers can kind of start anywhere they want. They can go back; they don't necessarily have to read it in chronological order. Although I think that's probably the best way. It kind of shows you exactly. It's been kind of an uninterrupted timeline of what I call organized corruption since then. But I never cease to be amazed by this. I'm still obviously analyzing politics now, but I take a very dim view of our leaders, as you know, and our media for reporting the facts. That's why books like mine, I think, amaze readers, because I'm just putting out there the information that people really should know if we had actual journalists.
Journalism was covering what they should be, this would be common knowledge. Now, you were red-pilled back in the 50s, you're not that old. So back when you were a teenager?
Yeah, well, in the 70s, when I was born in 56, I guess I became red-pilled to a degree, when I first started looking into the JFK assassination. I think it was 1975, I probably was working for Mark Lane's group and reading all the critical books. And from there, but I was pretty much a standard, just really far left-wing radical Democrat. I mean, I voted for Jimmy Carter in 76, the first time I could vote, and I didn't really like him, but I wasn't going to vote for Gerald Ford, a Warren Commission member. So I believed for a while that the Democrats, at least some of them, were the good guys. It took me a long time to break out of that left-right paradigm. And so now I'm a populist. And I tend to I can like people like Cynthia McKinney and Ron Paul pretty much equally, even though they're on the opposite ends of the spectrum, because they both bring a lot of good things to the table. So I'm definitely red pill. There's no doubt about it. I don't think there's ever getting once you start opening these doors, it's very hard to close them again.
CBD and THC are sort of like Betty Davis and Joan Crawford. They fight each other, but they really do their best work when they're together.
If you don't have cannabis in your medicine cabinet, you're missing out, ladies.
Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, George Washington, they all consumed cannabis.
Cannabis as a biofuel, cannabis as a fiber, cannabis as a medicine, cannabis as a food. The power of this plant is amazing.
Yeah, if you can't unlearn what you've learned, But let's dive into some of these topics. That's absolutely incredible. I mean, let's start with like some of the body count. It really isn't a left or right book. It covers all spectrum. You just look at the facts. And I think once you get into this, you stop having that left-right paradigm because you just realize it doesn't really exist. But the body count, you know, people talk about the Clinton body count, but the body count with the Bushes, with Obama, with Reagan, they were very high as well.
Yeah, and really, LBJ was probably the first one. LBJ had a body count a mile long. I mean, going back to the days before he was vice president, when he was a senator. So there, and in the upcoming book I'll be talking about, you'll see there, you know, FDR had a body count as well. I mean, their body counts. Clinton's was the most famous and the most extensive, certainly the most chronicled, and it continues. I mean, I was reading the other day somebody, it looked like an FBI agent or something, killed himself and his wife, or his wife killed him and then her, I don't know, but and they were, whether they were tied to the Clintons, it looked like it could have been, but it was still the kind of way you see all too often that these people, intelligence agencies, die. And that's all I was doing, it's just putting it out there and showing. I mean, when you have somebody like Vince Foster, obviously his death and lots of the deaths in the Clinton body count are very well detailed, but people don't know, for instance, like the guy, I don't remember his name right now, but the guy who wrote the book about W. Bush, and you know, he died very strangely after he made a documentary film and pretty much said, be careful. I forget the exact quote, but it's in the book. But he made one of those eerie comments that kind of recognized that his life was in danger, and he ended up dying that way. And that when you can't, certainly some of these obviously could be coincidental, they could be strange, but not all of them. I mean, Kathleen Willey, for instance, most people don't know, she's one of Bill Clinton's big accusers, you know, who claimed that he tried to harass her, or sexually harass her, in the Oval Office. And what most people don't know in the context of that, in fact, Linda Tripp was the one who supported her story by saying she saw her come out of the office with lipstick disheveled, or hair disheveled, or whatever. But most people don't know that she was coming there to actually ask for help for her husband, who was a big Democratic Party contributor. And she, unknown to her, her husband was already dead. His body, you know, he supposedly shot himself in the woods. I mean, how many? And these are upper class people. You know, I've never known anybody that shot themselves in the woods. I mean, that's what I look at these things. And, you know, how many people do you know that, you know, fell out of a high-rise building, like Nelson Rockefeller's personal secretary? I mean, I don't even know how that's possible.
it's like the holistic doctors where they're shooting themselves eight times in the back and they committed suicide. I mean, it's just Webb, you covered him in the book. Didn't he shoot himself twice in the head?
That's what they say. And the saddest part of all is his family supports that. His family was happy that the movie Kill the Messenger that was came out a couple of years. It was a good movie, good film, and kind of showed that Gary Webb was doing something important, was exposing a horrendous thing, the CIA's connection to drugs in the inner city and crack cocaine epidemic. But despite this, his family still is okay with believing he killed himself. Would you believe that your loved one shot himself twice in the head? I mean, I guess
no.
Maybe maybe it's possible under some bizarre circumstances, but it has to be really, really, really remote possibility. But we see this time and again, we see the same thing with Seth Rich and a murder that's happened since I wrote the book. His family, again, doesn't want to know the facts about who killed their son. And I don't understand that. I mean, to me, that's something, and that's what we run into over and over again. We saw it with Michael Hastings, one of the people in the Obama body count, who was, you know, told everybody he was about to break a huge story for Rolling Stone magazine. It was not going under. Then he runs his car into a tree at high speed. And his wife, you know, doesn't want to hear any conspiracy theories about it. I don't know. And Rolling Stone, how is Rolling Stone supposed to be this kind of left-wing? I used to read it. I used to subscribe to it back when I was a typical far left-wing Democrat. I thought it was cool. They were telling the truth. Well, if they're telling the truth, why aren't they concerned with their reporter making a comment like that and dying under strange circumstances?
Exactly. He was saying he was going to die.
Yeah. And again, and his wife doesn't care, the employer doesn't care, and that's why I think people are interested in books like mine that talk about these things, because no one else is really, I mean, you'll hear about them here or there, but they're all in one place in this book where you can see, and just the sheer number of them, and
but
the way
you,
of the,
But do you think, and I want you to continue with that thought, but do you think that, like, Michael Hastings with his wife doesn't care as much as that's the power of social conditioning, and that you don't want to think that you're part of a conspiracy theory? I mean, that's how powerful it is. Your own husband gets killed and you won't go there mentally.
Well, I guess. I mean, yeah, that's part of the problem with convincing anybody of any of these, any of this corruption, is that people don't want to accept that things are that bad. They don't want to accept that the people in charge are this corrupt. But I find a hard time. I mean, I could be, obviously, in some of these cases, they could have, you know, made them an offer they couldn't refuse. I mean, they could have just, you know, threatened their lives too. I don't know. In a lot of cases, we'll see. You can see it certainly in the Clinton body count, where someone would die, and then some, Kathy Ferguson, I believe, died, and then her husband-to-be went and killed himself at her grave. I mean, very, you know, after that. So we see this stuff does happen. So it's possible they could easily have warned her off with that, or just say don't do that, or they, you know, they could have been paid off. Who knows? People, everybody has their price, and if they know there's nothing they can do about it anyhow, I'm not necessarily blaming them, because I don't know what they're going through, but I just know if it was my loved one, I wouldn't be satisfied with if that was my son. My son's close to Seth Rich's age. I wouldn't be satisfied with him being shot in the back in D.C. and not being robbed, especially if he was a DNC staffer who had all but been named as the leaker by Julian Assange. Yeah,
exactly. And so it's people. I believe that's the power of not wanting to be different than the crowd, the sheep mentality. That's how powerful it is. That's how part of the herd, you know, genetics is.
Yeah, that's why I think that we confront that every day, that people just all, even a lot of the people, like I obviously know a lot of people in the JFK assassination research community, and it's one of the most fractured communities you can imagine. There's so much infighting, and everybody has, you know, thinks they have the only answer and so forth. So they're always calling each other disinfo agents. We run into that 9/11 community as well. But on the JFK assassination, a lot of these people are certain, obviously, that Oswald didn't do it, and it was a conspiracy. Most of them accept that MLK and RFK also were conspiracies. But beyond that, they don't want it, they don't accept that. Most of them aren't 9/11 truthers. They don't necessarily even believe that. So not everything's a conspiracy. And I tell people, you know, everything, when you have conspirators in charge, then pretty much everything significant is a conspiracy, because they're conspirators. This is how they work. It's how they do business.
I don't know how anyone can look at 9/11 with an honest look and not know that there are problems there. I mean, it's so obvious the narrative is wrong.
Yeah, well, you would think so. But again, it's so much came out of that, kind of a new and really over-the-top flag waving. I remember just driving around at that time and seeing so many people with, you know, flags flying from their cars, and everybody had a flag out front, and they kind of looked at you if you didn't have a flag. And so, and this was, and we see it in later instances, like the Boston bombing, where it's Boston Strong, and whatever city had one of these events happen, it's so-and-so strong. You know, like it's somehow the city is to be sympathized with, but by questioning any of these narratives, somehow you're disrespecting the city, certainly those who allegedly died in them. And that's what happens with 9/11. I remember one of the most incredible quotes, I think I have it in the book, where Dennis Leary, who's not one of my favorite comedians, but he reacted typically to this, where I think somebody asked him about 9/11, and he said, you know, my brother's a firefighter. You know, looked like he wanted to hit him. The fact that his brother's a firefighter, what does that have to do with anything?
I think it's more respectful, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Looking at the truth is giving them respect. I'm giving you the utmost respect by telling you the truth on this. And by lying and covering it up, that's having a complete lack of respect for the victims.
Right. And because it wasn't investigated, then you have people, you know, maybe he was talking about that. I don't know. You have people that believe it never happened and it was fake and all that. And it's hard to argue with anybody, because nothing is ever investigated, and there always are incredible questions. And as you know, what I wrote on 9/11, I mean, I don't go down that rabbit hole, but there are a lot of rabbit holes to go down. I mentioned the two friends, the two women that had always flown together on every flight, and they were talked about in these heart-wrenching stories and on a bunch of news reports. And what was there? Again, no investigative journalist asked when. We're told on the one hand that all the flights were very mysteriously and curiously like half full or less half full, which usually doesn't happen. But that's what we were told. So how is it they said they couldn't fly together? How could they not fly together when all of the flights had plenty of room on it? And nobody, again, if a journalist, a real journalist was out there, that would have been the first thing they'd ask. I mean, that, or in that particular case, they would have, when somebody brought that story to the producer or whatever, he would have said, well, wait a minute, these flights were, they weren't even fully booked. What, that doesn't make any sense. Why couldn't they fly together?
There's so many inconsistencies. I mean, it's just, that's why I'm saying anybody who is like being intellectually honest with themselves knows that there's an issue with that one. I mean, the trading that occurred before the event, the building 7 that went down building that was 7. Across the 2-lane highway.
Exactly.
It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and I think the most important thing to remember there too is that before 9/11, there was, had never been a high-rise building made of, with a steel frame that had ever collapsed from fire. And since there were three that day, including building 7, which wasn't hit by a plane or debris at all, and since that day, none have. And I have cases in the book since then of buildings where you can see a different, for instance, I wondered at the time, and I remember just amongst myself, I mean, I have no, you know, obviously experience in this, but I just wondered at the time, first of all, I really questioned why so many people were jumping out of the buildings. That made no sense to me because people don't generally become suicidal like lemmings en masse. I mean, these were people that had good jobs. And I didn't, especially before the first building collapsed, maybe after the first building collapsed, I don't know, maybe panic set in, but before the first building collapsed, I don't know why anybody would have had reason to suppose I'm never going to get out of here. This building is going to collapse.
Well, unless it was so hot that it was worse to be in there than just jumping.
Well, I think that's what we're told, but it didn't. And, you know, people have analyzed this. They've shown like where the supposed jumpers were. And you have people, again, on the Let's Roll forums. That's why you can go down these rabbit holes where they really analyze these pictures of the jumpers and so forth. And it there's a lot to question there. And we know since then with things like Sandy Hook and the Boston bombing, how much of an element of this stuff is that just doesn't appear to be real. Isn't all these things. So why I don't go all the way with there's a lot of people that believe laser weapon, that it was a hologram and nothing really happened that day. I mean, I think, you know, you go that far and it becomes then, you don't believe anything, but clearly there's a lot to question about what happened that day. And every aspect of it is, to me, is very strange. And one of the things I was going to say about recently, and I don't have it in front of me, but one of the cases that happened since then, I was amazed that they had sent helicopters with water hoses to try to put out fires. And of course that building didn't collapse, the one in question. And I wondered at the time, I kept thinking if I had been in the building, I would have expected someone to either come up on the roof and rescue people that were trapped or would have at least flown by and tried to spray water. And I didn't see that but just as we saw the planes flying around for almost an hour and a half and nobody took any action at all, including, of course, flying to the heart of the defense establishment, the Pentagon. And this is after already the other two planes had hit the World Trade Center. So by that time, we should have been on maximum alert. And if any action was taken that day, I don't know what it was.
Well, that's the point. It was just, there's thing after thing after thing. The plane going into the Pentagon completely disappearing as it goes in.
Whatever.
The missing footage. I mean, it's just so many things that are just, I never say I know what happened. All I know is the official narrative is BS.
Right. That's what people tell me. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me why they would fly a missile into the Pentagon and say it was a plane. I don't know. I don't know what would have happened to those people on the plane, but all I can do is look at the photographs and the wings had to go somewhere. There's no impact to point of the wings and the wings aren't out on the lawn. So what happened to the plane? I mean, that's a big plane that just pretty much disappeared. And I don't accept that. And so I don't know why it would have been. All we can do is look at it. And like you said, with the footage, even in 2001, we started to have security cameras in too many places back then, even weren't quite like it is now. So Orwellian, but at the Pentagon, I'm quite sure they had more security cameras than maybe anywhere in the world. For them not to have, footage
obvious
of this from several different angles, and yet we've still never seen.
And then the body count with that, with witnesses that have died, it's just, it's so obvious. Okay, so one of the things that you talk about in your book is that all of these other conspiracies make Watergate look like child's play. And that, I think that's true. Watergate, all these things that are coming on that we just take for granted now is way worse than Watergate.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's and that's what that was one of the most, because I first became politically aware as a teenager during Watergate. You know, I started following it, and that was what I kind of wanted to do. I wanted to be a journalist like Woodward and Bernstein. I said, oh, I'm going to be a journalist, a liberal journalist, you know, bring down these terrible conservatives like Nixon. You know, Nixon was a bad name in my house. You know, everybody hated Nixon. We loved Kennedys. You know, we were a Catholic family. So, you know, naturally, my family loved the first Catholic president. And so I was kind of predisposed to be that way. But in retrospect, now having read Len Kolodny's book, Silent Coup, and I know Len Kolodny, I've talked to him several times, and I think he really redirected attention on Watergate the way it should be. I think that was Nixon's political assassination. I really don't know why, because
exactly.
Nixon wasn't really doing anything good, but maybe he was just a bit too much of a loose cannon for them. I really don't know. But if you look at Watergate, it really was a second-rate burglary, as they called it. And the only thing interesting about Watergate is the body count, which I have in there, courtesy of Mae Brussell. Who had some great Ray Brussell, who had some great shows, radio shows you can still access online, and people have actually compared me to her before. I don't know if I'm that far out in some ways, but she has a body count there that is pretty impressive. But again, I don't know what it's connected to, because ostensibly on the surface, it was a crime that made no sense. I mean, Nixon won 49 states. I don't think there was any threat. Now, there would have been a threat from Ted Kennedy, who I believe, Chappaquiddick was his political assassination. I believe he was stopped from running in 72, which I think he would have run in 72, possibly won. He certainly would have won in 76. But the court, what I call a court historians, and in the upcoming book, I use that term over and over again. And what happens is it's a combination of the mainstream media that we all know and love today that distorts everything, current events, with the court historians. The court historians are the ones who are the mainstream media kind of gatekeepers of the past. They control the narrative there. So therefore, if John Wilkes Booth's family is still trying to get the body exhumed at Greenmount Cemetery in Baltimore, they're not going to let it happen. Because even though you're talking about 150 plus years removed from whatever happened there, that changes so many things about what they've written.
Well,
and discredits them.
Well, and you blame the media. You blame our journalistic, our country's journalism on where we're at. Because if they would have been doing their job for decades, the corruption would never have gotten to this point. And now the internet is starting to expose it. But are we too far down that path? I mean, what do you say about that whole development of the media not exposing it, letting it get out of hand, and now with the internet coming up?
Yeah, well, I think the internet is exposing to many people, especially young people, just how bad the mainstream media is. That's why when Donald Trump said fake news, a lot of us said right on, because it is fake.
Exactly.
Even though he can be as fake as them, but when he said that, and it became such a great catchy term, because it is fake news. I mean, we know that's why I get in arguments with my friends on the left, even despite Survival of the Richest, which should appeal to the left very much. People have a problem with me that know me, because they know that I don't like social justice warrior type of liberalism. I'm a populist. So, and I hate this authoritarian political correctness that's out there. So recently I've been getting lots of arguments with them about the children on the border and all that stuff. And I've tried to point out how, you're acting as if America has always, our leaders, we would never do anything like this. When we're, as we speak, we're killing children in other countries. We killed at least 500,000 children in Iraq for a senseless embargo.
Well, they're hypocrites. That's what the problem is. And under Obama, there was all sorts of problems. And these problems exacerbated under Obama. Right. What I like about Trump's view on this, which people can argue all day long, we need to fix the law. We need to fix this mess. I might not agree with how to fix it with him or others, but he's absolutely right that we need to fix it. And keeping it status quo is not acceptable. The having the law in place and then just not following it is BS. So the left's view, and then having it be a human trafficker's dream, what the left wants to do is, who they think they're the left, they want to keep it the way it is, and it ends up being this human trafficker's dream. Right. Well, so that's the hypocrisy there.
Oh, right. I wrote a while back on my blog, I wrote an article where I talk about, what I'm arguing about in Hidden History and everything I write, I'm usually going against what I call the official narrative of anything. Because the official narrative is being set by the mainstream media, conventional politicians, court historians. And what I am trying to say is that people, and I think this is what has happened since Trump was elected. Trump, in his own way, I mean, obviously he's disappointed me tremendously, and on the surface he appears to have a really ugly personality and someone that would probably not be fun to be around and certainly not to work for. But in many ways he has countered, at least his rhetoric during the campaign, countered the official narrative, and I'm talking about a collective official narrative, and that is that things are okay, basically okay. The system works, you know, and we see this. On the left today, where we saw all the protests against Trump, where basically I kept trying to say, what are you protesting? You're not protesting the wars or anything like that. You're basically jumping up and down and screaming that this guy can't be president. And that seems to be the case. And I've argued, what do you think? How different would it be, other than it wouldn't be as interesting without Trump? But do you think Hillary Clinton wouldn't be doing lots of awful stuff? Is President Pence what you want? Do you really like President Pence? So they just want him gone.
Yeah, you know? They just hate the personality. They hate his personality. Now, I was against Clinton because I knew she did bad stuff. You know, exactly. I mean, I knew that she did the stuff in Haiti. I knew she made crap up for, she's an awful person. So I knew she was. Now, Trump, we knew his personality was, but was his policies going to be awful? And I mean, it was like a big question mark. We didn't really like his personality against somebody who we knew was bad. So my problem.
Yeah, well, that's what I said at the time. I mean, I voted for Trump. I don't regret doing it because I realized at the time it was probably very unlikely that this lifelong New Yorker, mostly liberal Democrat, who was friends with the Clintons, friends with Giuliani, people like lots of people in the establishment that I hate, that we should all hate for what they've done to the country. But I thought, this is the only kind of outsider we're going to get the way our system is structured, a renegade billionaire Perot. Who maybe, and I thought it's not beyond the realm of possibility that this guy saw the sausage being made from the inside all these years and just didn't like a lot of stuff about it and decided finally, hey, I've got all the money I need. I'm going to run for the country, for the presidency. So it certainly looks, I don't know what he's doing. I mean,
he think could that, fix some stuff and it could be a bridge.
Well, immigration was my issue because I've been, and that's one reason that distinguishes me from most people on the left. And that's why I've had a problem with so many people on the left with survival of the richest. They love most of what I'm talking about, but they just cling to this immigration thing. And I keep saying, the left should hate immigration because it's you don't need – I mean, it's just very simple. We don't have enough jobs for people here. Why would you keep bringing more people in to have jobs? And you're bringing in extra poor people, poorer than the poorest Americans. We already know that 50% of Americans have less than 1% of the collective wealth and make less than $27,000 a year. Every one of these illegals is entering at the absolute bottom, so they're adding to that 50%. They're making America poorer and poorer. They work for cheaper lower wages, so they're lowering all our wages. The left doesn't see that. All they see is that the fact most of these immigrants are non-white. Let's put it that's what it is. And it's a voting block for the Democratic Party. And they play on lots of good people. Lots of people, my friend, I'm amazed to read their posts on Facebook and stuff. It's like, I can't believe you're following President. And they're trusting the same media that is telling you Oswald acted alone and that 19 crazed Arabs did not. What credibility do they have?
It's crazy. Well, my husband is Mexican. He's a dual citizen. My children are dual citizens. I'm not. I'm just an American. But, he sees both sides. He actually likes the fact that Trump is trying to fix it. And my son's girlfriend is a DACA person, and DACA's terrible. She can't get into programs, all sorts. Fix it. Don't just leave it like it is. Fix it. And that's what I like the fix it comment. And I don't know if I like the, put this hard wall up and just kick everybody out and be like Israel is to the Palestinians.
Right.
But we have to fix it and get smart people down there who actually care about people fixing it, like what you're talking about. Because if you get people who care, and we talked about this last time, you get people who care, things tend to work itself out. We just have human traffickers taking advantage of the system. The left is allowing human traffickers to just go on there and pillage these people.
Right. And that's, again, what attracted me to Trump is that Trump, one of his comments that I had been saying for years was, you either have a country or you don't. I talked about that on Facebook the other day, is what you're saying about these, every adult in America that is detained for anything, is you're separating a family. So, I mean, they're lost in this whole discussion is the fact that because the left doesn't want to, they don't think they did anything wrong. And I said, okay, you either have borders or you don't. Okay, that's one discussion. You want to have open borders, then understand you don't have a country anymore. So let's just pave the way to the one world government. I've written so much about that. You can't talk to your local school board representative. Do you think, or you're certainly not your local congressional representative, your senator, what kind of representation do you think people would get with somebody on the other side of the world that might be representing you in whatever kind of world government?
Oh, it'd be terrible.
Yes, not to mention the kind of taxation you'd have for a world government to try to fix the problems of the world. We can't even fix our own. So this is something no one should want. You should want representation as close as possible to you. We've lost that. But again, the left is just so, and they've fallen hook, line, and sinker. Again, lots of good people who I love and who loved my books, and I feel bad arguing with them. But I just can't believe how you're listening to the Seth Meyers of the world and the Rachel Maddows. I mean, these are people who lie about who don't believe anything you believe. They believe there are no conspiracies.
Well, I just don't understand. Well, they're being intellectually dishonest because they're not looking at the facts, but also thinking that you can have a one world. Now, there are some things that we could do worldwide that would make us, you know, better. But that being said, I don't know what those things are. Almost everything should be pushed down. Now, when you look at businesses know very well that if you want a thriving entrepreneurial type environment, you have to push the authority down to the lowest level possible. They know that's how things work. But if you have centralized control of everything, it's this huge bureaucratic, no innovation. It's just the way it is. And do we really want that? Do we want just this total controlled society where you have no voice whatsoever?
No. And I think that's the problem, is that we have all, America has become a socialist nanny state in terms of control, in terms of taxation in many instances, in terms of authoritarian dictates and so forth, abridgments on freedom of speech, things like that. But in terms of services provided, we are a bare bones nothing. I mean, the people get nothing in return for what they're paying for.
Well, there was a quote that you had in your book that we pay more in taxes for healthcare.
Yes.
Than country, many countries that get universal healthcare.
Yes.
And we don't get universal healthcare.
We get nothing in return unless you're apparently illegal immigrants do. Explain that to me.
but that's crazy. That stat is crazy. Yeah.
It is. And there's so many stats in that book, and certainly in Survival of the Richest, that are almost unbelievable. I don't believe myself half the time. But, I mean, there are sorts. A lot of them are, you know, from Bureau of Census and things like that. So they're official government statistics, and they don't exactly help the cause of those in power. So I tend to trust them. But I have grown fond of saying that you could get a random group anywhere in the world of a random group of preschoolers and put them in charge of this country, and they do a better job.
Well, wouldn't have an alternative motive. No. If you just did nothing, would be better than what we got right now.
Because we have such a mismatch of corruption and incompetence. I mean, a lot of the people are just stooges and are just incredibly stupid. But when you have a situation like we had, and I go into this maybe more in Survival of the Richest, but I touched on it in Hidden History. When you have people, every election time, look at the hatred like a Nancy Pelosi or John McCain, Lindsey Graham. You wonder, who is voting for these people? I mean, what are their constituents saying? Yet 96% or so of these incumbents are reelected every election.
Well, so, and that's where you get into the voter fraud.
Yeah, exactly. Because you look, because people, the same people that vote them in supposedly have a less, like a 6% approval rating for them. So, but no, again, the press doesn't talk about that dichotomy. And I'd love to see some reporter explain how in the same polls that show that American people have less confidence in them than used car salesmen, that they somehow have to vote these people in over and over, in the most controversial figures there, the people that are, you know, the Pelosi types of the world. Certainly half of her constituents have to despise, I would think. And I don't mean to pick on her, but she's a perfect example of someone who's been there for a long time. And we saw it for many years. Now, Trump recently has come out for term limits, which that's a great thing, too. So we'll see if he sticks by that. But he changes so much in the wind that he blows one way. Like if he signs DACA wasn't even a law. It was just something Obama made up, and all he had to do, and the first day, and I believe originally he said he would get rid of it the first day. Instead, he kind of played along and appears to be, you know, playing, according to his supporters, playing this 5,000 degree chess, which no one understands. I mean, if he's brilliant, he's really brilliant, because a lot of the times he just sounds like a 12-year-old that doesn't know what he's talking about at the time. So,
well, he has done a few things that I think are really good, like lowering the corporate tax rate to the point where it's average in the world. Now, there's loopholes and all sorts of BS built into that, and that's a different issue. But there's no reason for a corporate tax rate to be the highest in the world. It needs to be at least average.
Right. Well, we're seeing.
And that's where they lowered it to.
Well, we'll see if that, because the idea there by doing that is we'll see if it actually brings factories back and incentivizes the rich to invest in their companies.
The rich. I don't mean to cut you off, but it's also all these small businesses everywhere. Well, yeah, those are the ones that got screwed.
Well, those are the ones who would be helped by it, because the rich, most of the time, GE, Amazon, we learned last year, paid no taxes.
Exactly.
So how do you cut the tax rate when they're not paying any to begin with? So.
It's the small businesses that are really being helped by that. And there's no reason why small businesses should have the highest tax rate in the world. That's ridiculous. Now that's helping big corporations.
Right, right. Well, certainly we see it, whether it's the media or any other aspect of our society. Mergers are everywhere. So we have a consolidation of power everywhere, whether it's in the central government and into the business world, where we have, I think it's like down to four corporations that own almost the entire media, things like that. So the people, it's hard to have a choice. So, you know, free enterprise is supposed to be based on competition. And if just a few people own everything, the competition is a fraud. And that goes into more what I wrote about in Survival of the Richest. But
that's what a communist socialist environment is. I mean, that's what the left doesn't see, is that when you want all that, you want the government to control everything. Well, now we have this fascist corporate state where they're control. You got to break that down if you want to see the kind of ethics and the kind of human dignity that we want to have in our society, because those people tend to be greedy and do well. Your book shows that we have some nefarious activity going on.
Yeah, well, people, and it's I've had even people that liked Hidden History, and very few people have trashed it, but some people, again, they can't break out of that left-right paradigm, so they love the sections on Obama and Clinton, but, you know, they're upset about what I wrote about Reagan and Bush, and vice versa. Some of them love the stuff on Reagan and Bush, but they want to cling to this belief that Clinton and Obama, there was a vast right-wing conspiracy to get Clinton, which is ridiculous, and it's almost as bad as the Russian conspiracy, you know,
that's
reality.
Terrible. And, you know, the Russian bot.
I recently wrote something. Lou Rockwell published it. He publishes some of my articles about the Russians. Readers can read it there on my blog. But it's I've lost so many friends on the left over this Russian stuff, because they have bought it, and it's just amazing. I said this is a state-sponsored conspiracy theory, and it's as dumb as the 19 crazed Arabs with the box cutters and plastic knives. You can find the wildest conspiracy that there were holograms on 9/11, anything you want. And it's not as ridiculous as these state-sponsored conspiracy theories. But those are okay. They're not conspiracy theories. I have good people posting, oh, there's evidence of collusion, and that Mueller was a cover-up artist for 9/11. These guys, they're not good guys. Call me Mueller.
Exactly. Yeah, they hate him so much. If Rachel Maddow says it, we believe her.
Yeah, and it's all because of Trump. And I've grown fond of saying that Trump is like our Goldstein from 1984. If you remember 1984, Goldstein was the ultimately fake opposition. You know, Orwell was so brilliant and everything. He was the first one to kind of come up with this fake opposition where the people would get together in the party every day for 2 minutes of hate. They would just show Goldstein ranting and raving, or like you could see Trump doing. And they would just go crazy into fits of rage for two, and they got their 2 minutes hate out. Well, in Trump's case, it's constant hate. It's more than way more than 2 minutes, and all they have to do is show him, and he certainly plays into it because with his blunt, kind of tough talking New York
style. It is kind of
funny.
It makes it fun.
Yeah. I mean,
it's entertaining, but that shouldn't be entertaining.
No, yeah, it is entertaining, but unfortunately, it's our country. But half the country or more is into this too. They just despise, and I think that's why they're so willing. They hate him so much, and he's become the ultimate lightning rod, and he's in the middle of all these issues. So you can't write about anything, whether it's the children on the border, this late thing. It's all because of Trump.
Yeah, he's to blame for everything, but nothing that he does is good. I mean, he's got this double-edged sword. He's hated so much that it doesn't matter what he does.
I wrote when he had the deal with North Korea, which I thought was a pretty good thing, and it sounded pretty good to me. And the left hated it. And I said, look, word for word, this is exactly what the right said about the Iran deal with Obama. I thought Obama took a step in the right direction with the Iran deal. And I think Trump took a step in the right direction. I mean, anything that tones things down, to me, it's good. And in this case, they were like ranting, oh, he gave away, like, we can't do military exercise in South Korea. Why do you want to do military exercise in South Korea? Why does the left want that? But they hate Trump so much that this, and they're not willing. I mean, if somehow universal peace was declared tomorrow and under Trump, they wouldn't acknowledge it, or they wouldn't give him any credit for it. I mean, I certainly wouldn't expect that to happen, but it's one of those things where he's such a lightning rod, and it's become all politics has become so hard to discuss now, especially for somebody like me who I'm trying to be an independent. I'm trying to look at this guy. I mean, a few weeks ago, the SGT report, you had suggested.
Yeah, I thought that was a great interview. Oh, did you get blasted with comments?
It had like over 800 comments, and it had like 2,700 thumbs up. I mean, most people liked it on that, but the comments were so, I mean, keep your friends closer and your enemies closer, and this guy doesn't know anything. And I thought I was pretty fair to Trump. I just kind of said that, look, I don't like the people he's surrounding him with. He's disappointed me largely. I don't see his populist rhetoric, campaign promises being followed. But I don't think I was hateful at all. So that's why I'm kind of caught in the middle. I had that where I was blasted by the pro-Trump supporters, but then I posted something on Facebook defending Roseanne, just saying that I thought she should have been able to say what she wanted on Twitter without losing her job. And I don't feel sorry for a one percenter, but I don't like the fact that you can be fired, you know, because that could be something in a bakery. That's Roseanne, middle-aged woman in a bakery who gets fired because her black coworker doesn't like what she said on Twitter. Do we want that? I mean, freedom of speech is freedom of speech, but the left doesn't want that. So you get it from both ends.
Well, and I think us being independent, I think we're the silent majority. I really do. Because, you know, you look at the thumbs up, there's more thumbs up than thumbs down. And I think the silent majority is like, wait a minute here. I might not like Trump's personality. I mean, how can you love Trump's personality? But he's doing some good stuff. He's not bad at everything. And the
best part of him continues to be what I said all along, even when I was supporting him during the campaign. He has all the right enemies. I mean, all the right people hate him. So either this is the greatest psyop of all time, which it could be. I mean, basically, but every time he looks completely lost, he seems to be getting tough again with immigration. Now, again, I think you have to win immigration. I think you have to deport people. I don't think there's any way around it, because there are millions and millions of people. And that's what I thought. If he did something where he deported, we don't even know how many illegal aliens. Of course, you can't call them illegal aliens anymore. Undocumented people, or whatever you want to call them in the political correct term. If people entered the country illegally, it sends a message if you deport them. And you don't need a wall. A wall is kind of a garish thing. And if you just wall in all the people if you give amnesty and you wall them in, it's already too late. You're just walling everybody in, and it just looks like a giant eyesore, and everybody's going to criticize it. Plus, it's incredibly expensive. Mexico's not going to pay for it, obviously. We know that. So do we want to pay for that? I don't know. But on immigration, it's refreshing to hear. At least he seems to be standing his ground on this. So we'll see what happens. If he doesn't give any amnesty, I'll be happy. And if he finds a way to deport the millions that need to be deported, and that sounds cruel, but I'm sorry. It just,
well, I do feel for the kids that came here when they were two, lived here the whole life, and now they have a life here. I have a heart for them. I really do. Yeah. I don't know. The amnesty should, I believe, amnesty we should do with that. But we created this problem.
Yes.
We got to stop the problem, because in the long term, we have less people with issues. Right. That's the fix it part I like, because sometimes you have to take the bad stuff now to fix it long term. And if we're never going to fix the bad stuff, then we're always going to have bad stuff. And going in this no man's land right now is not okay for anybody. And like I said, we have the highest human trafficking of all history right now. And President Trump said that yesterday in a speech. He said, human trafficking is the highest it's ever been all through history because of the internet and everything. It's really getting bad right now. And the borders are a big part of that. And to me, that is inexcusable. Our children, you have a big, we're going to talk about this a little bit. In your book, you talk about the human trafficking, the sex abuse.
Yes.
And so when I see politicians want to keep those borders open, I don't trust them. I don't trust what they're, you know, there's the good people in Congress who maybe have legitimate motives, but they don't get it. And so they don't care. They don't care about them because they don't get the big picture. But the people who get the big picture, and they are involved in keeping those trafficking networks open, I don't trust what their motives are.
No, and certainly if you as you mentioned, I have a whole section in there on that, and I wrote about Pizzagate on my blog. I created something there, and it fits in with all the other scandals that did from the past that I wrote about. It's undeniable that the people in power, their go-to thing for whatever reason, we can't understand it, is to have sex with children at some point. When they have everything else, that appears to be what they want. And we can't imagine why, but maybe it's some kind of a blackmailable thing. And a lot of us have speculated for a long time why so many politicians end up being gay and why so many end up being pedophiles, is because maybe these people are sought out because they're blackmailable. And
gay? Because they're in the closet and they don't want to be open about it?
No, certainly in the past, that's when, and certainly a lot, especially you see so many of these, I laugh about it with some of my gay friends on Facebook, where if you see somebody that's really violently anti-gay, you're almost assured he's going to be gay. He's going to be exposed. I mean, it has happened so many times. It's laughable. So I don't really know why that element comes in there, and there's some denial or whatever. But I think still there's still, especially on the conservative side, there's still kind of a stigma attached to it. So if they want to have positions on certain issues, it doesn't look good for them, I guess, to be openly gay. But I just think, especially with the pedophile angle, that there's so many people in power that appear to have this impulse that I would hope is not that prevalent in the mainstream out in the public, but it just seems to be that it's there. And I wrote a lot about it in history, and certainly the Franklin scandal had lots of unnatural deaths associated with it beyond what they were doing with the children. And but again, this is one of those rabbit holes that people, the same people on the left that are so concerned about the children in cages and parents being separated and stuff, they don't care about this. They'll roll their eyes and call you a kook if you even mention Pizzagate. All Snopes said, that's been discredited. You know, okay, Snopes said it, so it must be true.
Well, Ben Swan did an objective piece. It was just really objective. He's just looking at facts, and just because he covered it in an objective way, he was let go because of that.
Yeah.
That's how much they're covering up. If that's not obvious to people, he wasn't saying one thing or another. He didn't say it was real. He didn't say it wasn't. He said, but there's some things we need to look at and do real journalism here. And then he got canned for that.
Well, there's zero tolerance for someone like a Ben Swan, who really is certainly not extreme. He wouldn't be what I would consider a conspiracy theorist. And certainly Sean Hannity is mainstream. He would say 9/11 was done by the crazed Arabs. He thinks Oswald killed JFK. But he did very uncharacteristically a story on the Seth Rich murder, as you remember, last year, I believe it was. And I was amazed. It was pretty bold for Fox News. And boy, they were blasted immediately. Hannity, I think, had to apologize. And I, as I understand, again, Seth Rich's family, instead of being concerned about the information that he revealed in a very kind of mild expose, I mean, he didn't go into it as deep as certainly any of us would. His parents are suing Fox News over that. And again, what are they suing them? And I, as I've said, what are you suing over? Trying to tell the truth about your son's death? I mean, what, don't you want to? I mean, I don't understand
that's
that.
The power of the sheep, I think. Yeah. But why in this last election were we allowed to get such crazy in-depth information on the candidates? The mainstream were saying just crazy stuff about the candidates. I mean, it was a no-holds bar almost on this.
Well, I think that's become the idea, the mainstream media's idea of freedom of the press now is to get get down in the mud and get personal on all these issues that really ultimately don't, but they, you notice they talk about the candidates, but they really unless it was alternative media, they weren't talking about Hillary Clinton's career of corruption, which I go through most of that in Hidden History. I mean, you know, the cattle deals, Filegate. I mean, there's just so many things with Hillary Clinton. It's not,
I don't know how anyone could like her. I have no idea how, especially I did a 4-hour show on Haiti and all the facts behind that. How can you have someone like that run our country? If they're ready to sell out whole countries of poor people under the disguise of helping them and getting charity, how could you possibly trust someone like that? And then also doing the pay for play. I have no idea how somebody could trust somebody like that. That to me, if you're voting for somebody like that, you have lost your mind.
That's what I said. If you're voting for her, when it came down to Trump, between Trump and her, Trump had lots of personal characteristics that were, unattractive. But he was, and a lot of his rhetoric, gave me chills, police state type stuff, wanting to give our corrupt, out of control police more power when they should be investigated and all the bad ones should be fired so we can get some kind of semblance of that would certainly heal a lot of the racial divide and so forth. But, when he keeps talking about giving them more power and, supporting torture and things like that, it just kind of made me cringe. But he also said so many great things, that nobody else had called out. Now, some of the stuff, again, like I think it's pretty hilarious that one of the things that really caught my ear was I've been talking about the fake unemployment stats for a long time. They changed those back in the 90s where they only count those who are currently getting unemployment benefits. So our real unemployment rate's probably 20-25% because we know we have close to 100 million American adults out of work. So how that adds up to 3% is something, I guess, for
it's
common core
men.
But Trump called those stats out and said they were fake. He's using the same stats now and bragging about it nonstop. So that's I tried to call the Trump supporters' attention to that fact, and they just, I enjoy voting for Hillary. It's like, you've never read anything I've written if you think I would vote for Hillary Clinton. I mean, that's what happens, and you get it on both sides. There's such a fake, phony left-right divide in this country now, where and Trump is right in the middle of it.